there. This is Stuart Haynes, and welcome to the iPharmRx podcast, where we explore the evidence that informs ambulatory care pharmacy practice. In today's podcast, we're going to be talking about, yet again, vitamin D supplementation. Low vitamin D stores have been linked to a host of diseases, including bone health, autoimmune diseases like multiple sclerosis and type 1 diabetes, cardiovascular disease, cancer, and respiratory diseases like COPD and asthma. While the use of vitamin D to prevent cardiovascular events and cancer has really not panned out, at least not in studies of the general population, the use of vitamin D in specific disease states where low vitamin D stores is very common might, and I emphasize might, be of some value. One population who might benefit from vitamin D supplementation are patients with COPD. Unfortunately, most of the studies that have been conducted to date have been relatively small and inconclusive. Thus, a meta-analysis of the available clinical trials might help us determine what the benefits and risks of vitamin D supplementation are in this specific population. Well, a recent study published online in March 2019 in the journal Thorax examined this clinically relevant question: does vitamin D supplementation reduce the risk of COPD exacerbations? Our guests today are Dr. Jennifer Clements and Dr. Lisa Gibbs. They critically examined this study in their commentary entitled "Vitamin D and COPD: Simple Solution to Prevent Exacerbations or a Waste of Breath." Dr. Clements is a member of the iPharmRx editorial board and on faculty at the Presbyterian College School of Pharmacy in Clinton, South Carolina. And Dr. Gibbs is a PGY1 pharmacy practice resident with Prisma Health in Greenville, South Carolina. Well, Jennifer, Lisa, it's great to have you both on the iPharmRx podcast.
It's a pleasure to be here, Stuart. Thank you so much for having us.
Well, before we get started, I want you to imagine you're seeing KL, a 59-year-old Latino male, in the family medicine clinic today, and the patient was referred to you for inhaler education. He was recently diagnosed with COPD and was started on a tiotropium inhaler. KL has had increasing shortness of breath and sputum production for the past 2 years, and given his history of smoking, was sent for pulmonary function tests by his primary care physician. The tests revealed that he has pretty significant airway obstruction with his FEV1 at 65% of predicted based on age and height. Fortunately, the patient quit smoking about 5 years ago, and he has no other chronic illnesses. The patient states he's had difficulty walking out to his mailbox and back, which is on a level driveway. To date, he's not been hospitalized or required emergency care for his respiratory symptoms. So before we talk about the study you reviewed for iPharmRx, I'm wondering what's going through your mind in a case like this. What additional information would you like to gather during this encounter? And what additional treatment options, if any, would you be considering at this point?
So first, I think that we would like to expand on the patient's history of COPD and know when he was diagnosed with this condition. It would also be important to know if the patient has had any additional symptoms related to COPD. Patients with COPD usually present with one or more symptoms, and he's had shortness of breath and sputum production for the past 2 years. So we would like to complete a review of systems on cough, chest tightness, and fatigue. Physical activity should also be assessed by knowing if there's been any restrictions in his activity due to what he's currently been reporting. It would be essential to complete assessment tools such as the Modified Medical Research Council, which is also known as MMRC, dyspnea scale, and the COPD assessment test known as CAT, in order to stratify and monitor progress at future visits. Second, it would be important to know how long and how much the patient did smoke, but at the same time congratulate him on abstaining from smoking for 5 years. We would also want to ask about the patient's occupation and history of any respiratory infection to have a complete history of exposure to possible inhaled particles or fumes. Third, we would like to assess tiotropium by asking if he received a prescription, if he picked up from the pharmacy, when he may have started to use his tiotropium, and if he has missed any days of its use. For any patient that would be on an inhaler, inhaler technique should be reviewed at all visits. So in this case, the patient should have an assessment of his technique, which may be with the Handihaler or Respimat. The timing of the pulmonary function test should also be clarified, such as when he may have had these tests completed. At today's visit, a resting pulse oximetry should be completed due to his report of shortness of breath. And lastly, we would like to gather some information on the patient's history with immunizations, specifically the pneumococcal and influenza vaccinations, to determine the need for possible administration per the CDC guidelines.
So Lisa, let's talk about the study you reviewed for iFormerX. The study was entitled Vitamin D to Prevent Exacerbations of COPD, a systematic review and meta-analysis of individual participant data from randomized control trials, and it was published in the journal Thorax, which I'm sure most of our listeners don't subscribe to. So can you give us a brief summary of the study design and its major findings?
Sure. This study analyzed independent participant data from double-blind, randomized, placebo-controlled trials. While there were four trials and almost 600 participants that met the inclusion criteria, only three trials had available independent participant data that was available for use. Therefore, their outcome data was based on more than 400 participants from those three trials. Their primary outcome was the rate of COPD exacerbations, and this was defined as either moderate or severe by the GOLD guidelines. The secondary outcomes were time from the first dose of study medication to moderate or severe exacerbation, the number of participants with at least one moderate or severe exacerbation, the number of COPD exacerbations that required admission to the emergency room, hospitalization, or both, the number of participants with at least one serious adverse event, hypercalcemia, or renal stone, the mean percent of pulmonary function at the last follow-up, mean BMI at the last follow-up, and then also COPD-related all-cause mortality. All three trials in the analysis used vitamin D3. However, the regimens did vary, with 100,000 international units per month, 120,000 international units every other month, and then 1,200 international units daily. Treatment lengths also varied between 6 months and 1 year. For the primary outcome, the analysis found that vitamin D3 supplementation did not reduce the rate of moderate to severe COPD exacerbations overall. And this result held true when age, sex, and severity of COPD were adjusted for. However, they did find that for those participants with severe vitamin D deficiency, and that was defined as 25 hydroxy vitamin D concentration of less than 10 nanograms per milliliter, vitamin D supplementation reduced the risk of moderate to severe COPD exacerbation by almost 50% compared to placebo. And then for each of the secondary outcomes, no statistically significant benefit was found with oral vitamin D3 supplementation when compared to placebo.
Well, there's one thing I know about meta-analyses, and that is that they are no better than the underlying studies that were included in the analysis. The PRISMA-P guidelines are intended to make systematic reviews and meta-analyses more rigorous by reporting about critical issues such as the study eligibility criteria, the search strategy, data collection, and data synthesis. Can you tell us about the strengths and weaknesses of this meta-analysis and whether you believe there are any sources of bias? What about potential limitations and confounders?
Yeah, so overall, we believe the potential bias is relatively low for this study. They did follow the PRISMA-P guidelines and had their protocol registered with Prospero prior to completing the study, which does reduce reporting bias. They also used the Cochrane Collaboration Risk of Bias tool and found that the three contributing studies were at low risk of bias. Unfortunately, they were not able to do a funnel plot to assess for publication bias just due to the limited number of studies they had. As far as the strengths go, a one-step and two-step analysis of the independent participant data was done for the primary outcome, and both of which had a similar estimate of overall effect. Another strength was the data was adjusted for multiple factors, including age, sex, and severity of COPD. There were several limitations as well. While the authors were able to get individual participant data for about 80% of those they sought it for, that was only 3 out of the 4 originally included at trials because one study had to be excluded due to lost data. The addition of the other 88 participants from that excluded study may have added to the power of the analysis to detect a statistically significant difference. However, we just don't know. Another limitation of the analysis is that the 3 studies analyzed had similar patient populations, which were mostly male and of white European ethnicity. Therefore, it's difficult to determine the benefit of vitamin D supplementation among patient populations that don't fit that demographic. And lastly, varying regimens and treatment durations were used for vitamin D supplementation. Those that were deficient in vitamin D got dosing that differs from what is recommended by the Endocrine Society guidelines on vitamin D deficiency and were underdosed in most instances.
So Jennifer, based on the results of this study and of other studies, do you think KL, our patient, should consider taking a vitamin D supplement or should we determine his 25-hydroxy vitamin D serum concentration first? And if you believe supplementation is reasonable, what dose and product would you recommend? Is this something he should take indefinitely or just a short period of time?
I think these are great questions regarding our patient. While the evidence with vitamin D supplementation may be promising to prevent acute exacerbations of COPD, it may be too soon to start vitamin D supplementation for KL. So the first thing to do would be to obtain a serum concentration prior to the initiation to determine first if the patient has vitamin D deficiency. One other thought would be that KL may not have been a patient included in the clinical trials, and therefore it's hard to know if the same benefit would apply to a different ethnic group. If vitamin D supplementation was warranted, it would also be difficult to determine the specific regimen as it varied the 3 individual trials. A potential recommendation seen in clinical practice could be vitamin D2 used as 50,000 international units as 1 to 2 times per week for 8 to 12 weeks for vitamin D deficiency. Once vitamin D concentrations return to a normal range, then it may be reasonable to initiate a maintenance dose of vitamin D3 supplementation. The dose of vitamin D3 could be given as a maintenance of 2,000 international units per day. But again, it's important to note that this type of regimen that was just now suggested was not studied within the 3 individual trials, as vitamin D3 was mainly studied and used for a short period of time. So overall, more evidence is definitely needed regarding an optimal regimen for vitamin D supplementation of either D2 or D3 over a specific period of time in patients with COPD to prevent an acute exacerbation.
Well, Jennifer, Lisa, it's been a pleasure to have you both on the iFormerX podcast today, and I want to thank you for joining me today to discuss the treatment of COPD and the potential role of vitamin D to prevent exacerbations. I think it's clear from your comments that you believe that vitamin D probably has a limited role in patients with COPD, but those who have a severe deficiency might benefit from vitamin D supplementation because it appears that it could reduce the risk of exacerbations. Well, what do you think? Should we be routinely measuring 25-hydroxy vitamin D concentrations in all of our patients with COPD? Or should we just go ahead and supplement everyone with vitamin D because it's inexpensive and readily available over the counter? Well, only iFormRx members can leave comments and use the interactive features on the site. You can become a member of iFormRx. It's free, so sign up today and be sure to sign in every time you visit. And if you are a board-certified ambulatory care pharmacist and want to earn recertification credit for this program, check out the link on our website. We've partnered with the American Pharmacists Association to make iFormRx content available for board recertification credit in easily digested chunks. Well, until next time, this is Stuart Haynes, editor-in-chief of iFormRx, signing off.